From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
You've talked a lot of times over the years, and it's sort of perfectly summarized in a recent episode of your TV show, that your mom told you that she didn't think she could love you if you were fat.
Yes.
Is that, she said those exact words?
She would say that today if we called her. Like, if we had the technology right now to call my mother and ask her that again, she would probably say, of course that's not true, but it would take her a minute. Like, it would be diplomatic.
Right.
Yeah.
But, like, if you were to say to her, or have you ever said to her, like, Mom, that's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
Do you say that? And if so, how does she respond?
She's got a fear of fat. There's nothing I could do about it. I don't know whether she could really love me either way. But, I mean, she does her best. She's got a lot on her mind, my mom. You know, maintaining a weight of 116 pounds for her entire life.
Right.
But yeah, no, it is messed up. But she has an eating disorder that she's made her life, and she's healthy, and somehow her life is really managing an eating disorder. So I understand it,
right?
You know, but it did screw me up. I mean, I have body image issues, and I have a tremendous amount of food shame because I love to eat. I love it.
Today on The Sporkful, I sit down with comedian Mark Maron, host of the podcast WTF, author of Attempting Normal, star of the IFC show Maron. Mark and I go way back. I was actually a producer on the first radio show he ever hosted many years ago at Air America Radio, and so we always have a blast hanging out together. On this show, we'll talk about what and how to eat without feeling bad about it, and also whether trying not to feel bad about it is even the point. Plus, we debate the efficacy of melon balls and discuss Mark's relationship with kale, which is one that goes back many years, I can tell you. But perhaps most exciting of all in this show, Mark dug up a clip of the two of us on the radio arguing about sandwiches 10 years ago. This is like the prequel to the Sporkful podcast, and it's been unearthed, and Mark and I will listen to it for the first time in a decade. Stay with us. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and great show for you today. But first, some exciting news, friends, which is that The Sporkful is now a weekly podcast. No more of this bi-weekly stuff for us. As of now, we're working twice as hard to make your life twice as fun and delicious. So I hope you're excited about that. Now, before we get to my conversation with Mark Maron, I think we need a little Thanksgiving report back. Because I know a lot of you asked over the weekend on social media how my turkey turned out, and I appreciate your concern. Thank you. But really, to tell you the story of what happened, I need to take you back to the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Here I am then. All right, so it's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. We're like 48 hours away here, and I am kind of freaking out. I gotta tell you. And I'm here with my producer, Anne, and we just spent like the past month putting together three episodes of the Sporkful podcast. We had web videos, recipes online, all this stuff, like our big Sporkful Thanksgiving rollout, right? And like, if there was one overarching point to everything we've been doing and telling listeners for the past month, it's don't worry. You can do it. It's going to be okay. We're here to relieve your anxiety. And now I'm freaking out. Like, the whole message was lost on me. Like,
so do you think maybe all of this talk actually spurred your anxiety, made you think about things you wouldn't have thought about otherwise?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I mean, like, so what happened is that we talked to Kenji Lopez Alt, the food science guru from Serious Eats, who's awesome. And he got me all revved up about dry rub as opposed to a wet brine, which is what I've done before, and spatchcocking. Which means it's like butterflying the turkey, you lay it flat. You know, the dry rub, he said, more turkey flavor.
Dan in the present again here. I'm just cutting in like because at this point, I started going on and on and on about my turkey thought process. And I'm not going to make you listen to the whole thing. I mean, this isn't a cooking show. But suffice it to say, I was really worried that this whole spatchcocking thing was a big mistake. I thought it would make the meat especially meaty, which might be great for some people, but my wife and kids really like it more tender and soft. And also the crispy skin that you get from spatchcocking, which is one of its big perks. Like, we had this huge turkey for a small number of people. We're going to have a lot of leftovers. Once you wrap up the leftover turkey and put it in the fridge, the skin's not crispy anymore anyway. So I was getting really cold feet about the spatchcocking. And my producer summed up the situation.
So now you're wondering, can you undo the spatchcocking? Like, are you ready to abandon the spatchcock?
Yeah, I just think it's not for me. I think it's a mistake. I've only been thinking about this nonstop for the past 72 hours, and I think I gotta let it go. I love Kenji, but I don't think I should spatchcock. I gotta call the farm. So I called the farm frantically and begged them to cancel the spatchcock order. And it was too late. Turkey was already cut. It's too late. So with a heavy heart, I decided to leave the office for a few minutes and go out for a walk. And in the elevator, coming back in, I talked to my coworker, Alethea, about the situation.
All right, I'm in the elevator with my coworker, Alethea. Hey, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
So you were asking about Thanksgiving, and I got to tell you, I'm kind of freaking out. Are you going that way?
Where are you going?
I'll go to my desk. So, oh, thanks. Get the door. I had them take out the backbone of my turkey, and I think it was a big mistake. What do you think I should do?
I think you should try something new and just leave it, and let's see something. I've never heard somebody pull out the backbone of the turkey. So let's see how it goes.
So I took Alethea's advice. And actually, she kind of restored my confidence to the point that I started having delusions of grandeur. I decided to try to get tender meat and crispy skin. My plan was to essentially like steam the turkey partway and get the meat tender, then uncover it and cook it on high heat to get the skin crispy. And it was tense there in the kitchen for a while. I was kind of improvising. My brow was wiped more than one time, I can tell you. At one point, someone even said, well, Daniel, if we have to order out for chicken, you know, ha 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 ha, that's not funny. Okay, that was not funny, Mom. All right. But it was tense. All right, it was tense. So eventually, I called it. I called it done. I took the turkey out of the oven. I let it cool, carved it up, and I served it. And they loved it. Everyone loved it. I mean, it was really touch and go there, but even my kids, the 1.5-year-old Emily, the 4-year-old Becky, they ate it right up. Mrs. Sporkful went to town on it. My parents, in-laws, it was a big success. The meat was soft, soft and tender. The gravy was so good. Kenji had said that one of the good things about spatchcocking is that you get the backbone removed so you can use it in your gravy, and the gravy was ridiculous. Now, as for my mission to also get the skin crispy, that failed. Totally, 100% failed. But it didn't matter because the turkey was delicious and everyone was happy. I think that the takeaway here is that giving people advice on how to cook their turkey or live their lives is mostly pointless. I mean, we all need to make our own mistakes, to have our own turkey-induced panic attacks, and to learn on our own that, in the end, Thanksgiving will be just fine. On a related note, tune in next year when I'll have a brand new Sporkful Thanksgiving special full of useful advice for us all to ignore. And now, here's my conversation with Mark Maron from the podcast WTF. We sat down together in his garage. I remember I was at his house a while back when it was just a garage. Now he tapes his podcast there. He's got all these famous people coming to see him there. So this garage now, it has all this mystique. So it was really cool to sit with him in the garage. Are you able to eat foods that aren't so good for you without feeling shame?
Yes. It's not, I can, but now there's other issues. Now I think there's cholesterol issues. But like, yeah, if I go out on the road or like, I will make time to do it, especially if I go to other cities and stuff. If I go to where something is, where it was created and the best of it is, I will eat it there.
And you go to, like you wrote on your blog a little while back about you were in the South.
Sure.
And you went to town down there. You had a great time. You ate really well. But like after those meals, are you like, that was great, I'm so glad I did that? Or are you like, oh,
is anybody glad? I mean, like, you know, the experience of shoving stuff into your face is amazing because everything makes sense and right. It just feels so good. But I mean, you know, come on. I mean, do you sit there after you've just, you know, eaten a pint and a half of ice cream or a whole fried chicken or something and go like, hey, I'm winning? What are you making me out to be some sort of freak?
No, not at all. Oh. I was trying to think for myself because there are times that I will feel bad about having eaten too much or something very unhealthy, and there are other times that I don't. And I think the dividing line is more about quantity. Like I feel like if I have something that's unhealthy, but I don't feel super full afterwards, if I eat it in moderation,
sure,
then I'm like, that was great. I'm really glad I did that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy I experienced things, but like lately, like, you know, every time I eat barbecue, like after I, no matter how good it is, when I'm done, I'm like, that's it. That's it for life. I've done enough of this. Because I can't really stop. And, you know, you always overorder at barbecue.
Right.
So a lot of times with me, it's sort of like, well, I'm not going to be back here. Let's get all the things.
Totally. I totally do that.
Yeah. And then you feel like, I don't think I need any of that ever again.
Like, I have to try every single thing.
Right.
Because I also find that at most barbecue places, there's always one thing that they do the best.
Yeah.
Brisket or beef rib or pork rib or whatever it is. So if I haven't been in that place before, I got to find out which thing that is.
Yeah. Well, no, you got to find that out. And then you're like, how bad could the sausage be? You know? Yeah, I generally feel bad, but I'm glad while I'm eating it. Isn't that what it's all about? When you're consuming something and you're like, this, how could life get any better?
Yeah, I mean,
it's the highs and the lows, man.
That's true.
It's like coming off crack.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You're just sitting there and like right when you're done, you're like, ugh, what did I do? What did I do? This is crazy. I wonder if I can eat more.
And you told Bon Appetit magazine that your dream breakfast is two eggs with biscuits and sausage gravy.
Yeah.
Talk about food shame.
Yeah.
I feel like sausage gravy.
I can't not do it.
There's no food that brings more immediate shame.
Can't not do it. It's so good. Good sausage gravy, so good. Even mediocre sausage gravy. With biscuits, even mediocre biscuits, I'm in.
But it's good for the I feel like in terms of the ratio of that moment of victory, this is amazing, I'm so glad I'm eating this, and then the aftermath, there's no worse ratio than with sausage gravy.
Yeah, but if there's like chunks of sausage in the gravy, how good is that? And the biscuits, I just love biscuits.
But
I love them.
Doesn't that say something about your personality, though? I feel like you are someone who wants the highest highs.
Yeah.
And you're willing to pay, like, you're willing to pay for it with low lows.
Yeah, clearly. I'm not sure which is actually more defining of my personality. Like, I think I do things to be, I think I'm very comfortable beating myself up. And I'm trying to fix that. Like, the other night, I went and had three slices of pizza.
Right.
It's not horrible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like two is enough. The three's okay. It's not a whole pie. But I felt pretty bad. But I was like, I put it into perspective. I'm like, was it worth it? See, that's the other thing. That's the really important thing with me is that I don't like eating stuff that's garbage. I don't like eating stuff that I can make at home. I don't like eating just okay stuff. If I'm going to put something in my mouth, I want it to be as good as possible or healthy. So when it comes to stuff like that, like biscuits and gravy, like, there's nothing that's going to make me more mad than just, like, crap. Like, I don't understand people. It's like, well, let's just get a sandwich. That you're going to waste a whole meal with that attitude? you know what I mean? Like, is there going to be a good sandwich? You know?
But see, my book is then perfect for you. That's so much of the book is about, like, let's make every bite more delicious.
No, I agree. But, like, this has to do with sort of really seeking things out and going places. Like, I went to a pretty famous barbecue place outside of Austin, and I made the wrong call. I've eaten at most of the ones outside of Austin, but I couldn't get to the one I usually go to. So it was really a toss-up between these two places, and one was kind of like spectacular because you literally walk through and pass the fire pit, but the other one supposedly had better meat, and some guy said, take a picture at the place with the fire and then go get the better. But I just said, how much different can it be? And I was a little disappointed.
Coming up, my conversation with Marc Maron continues. Remember how I said I was Mark's radio producer a while back? Well, he dug up tape of the two of us on the air 10 years ago arguing about sandwiches. We'll listen to it together for the first time in a decade. Plus, a debate over melon balls and Mark's recipe for a kale smoothie. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman. Before we get back to my conversation with Mark, I want to thank all you guys who called or came in to Book Review in Huntington, New York on Small Business Saturday to order a signed, personalized copy of my book, Eat More Better. I got to say, you guys, I was really nervous that nobody would call. So I told my parents that they had to call to order one book so at least the bookstore wouldn't think that that I was a total loser and they had made this promotion for nothing. But then you guys totally showed up and called. I actually took calls from eaters in Washington State, Georgia, even Belgium. It was really cool. The store actually sold out of the book. We had to put in an order for more. So thank you for that. And if you missed the window when I was at the store, you can still get a personalized copy of Eat More Better. I'll be back at Book Review periodically, and I can make the book out to you or a loved one. The other day, I even made one out to a man's unborn grandson. So this book makes a great gift, even for people who can't read. To get your personalized copy of Eat More Better, call Book Review in Huntington, New York today. And if you don't care about the personalization, then just get your copy wherever books are sold. And thanks. Now, let's return to my conversation with Marc Maron. And at this point, we're going to start with that tape that I told you about that Mark dug up from 10 years ago. We worked together on this morning radio show called Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. So first thing you're going to hear coming up is that tape of us arguing all those years back, and then we'll go straight from that tape back into my more recent conversation with Mark.
We had a debate here in the studio. Important stuff going on here in the studio. Dan Pashman has a stance that I'm not sure I agree with, yet he will defend it. We were discussing what we were going to have for breakfast, and the idea of the omelet came up, and then there was a cheese problem. He's got a cheese problem. He says that the place that we get our breakfast doesn't always have such good cheese. And this is a guy that says, I don't want a Philly cheesesteak sandwich if it has cheese was on it, which is the standard. So now, but here's it gets larger, because we went with Dan Pashman to the Philly cheese take place path, and it was good, but he said, well, if that's all that city has to offer, then I'm not down with it. But then it became a bigger problem about bread.
Well, this is something I feel very strongly about, Mark, and I am a bit of a sandwich connoisseur. I'll be honest with you, I put a lot of study and research and thought into the creation and manufacture of sandwiches.
Yes.
And I'm quite confident that you already have an inferior sandwich before you've taken a bite if you have hot things on the inside with cold bread on the outside. If you're going to have hot eggs and cheese or a burger or a hot dog or anything, whatever you're doing, you got to heat the bread if you're going to have hot inside.
Back up. This is crazy. You're talking crazy because you're denying the power of fresh bread. If you have a fresh roll, all right, that's really nice and fresh and soft, like a bulky roll, as they call them in Boston, or whatever they call them here.
Kaiser.
You know, a Kaiser roll, yeah. Right. That, and you put the egg sandwich on that. You're toasting a Kaiser roll that's really fresh, just it's wrong. I think you're wrong here.
I understand what you're saying, and I will grant you that in a situation where you have a small amount of bread and a large amount of hot filling, such as your corned beef example.
That was an example the listeners didn't hear.
Fresh rye bread.
Let's say you go to the Carnegie Deli and you order a hot corned beef sandwich with Swiss cheese. The corned beef comes out of the steam plate, out of the steam table. You slice it up hot. You put the cheese on it. It melts itself.
I understand.
And then you put it on a fresh piece of
rye
bread.
But if you're talking about one scrambled egg and one slice of cheese and a big, fat, bulky roll where your sandwich is like 80% bread, if that bread is not heated, then that's not a good sandwich.
The bulky roll squishes up. Like, it gets all soft and it meets the egg and cheese. It meets it. Do you understand? If you have a little toasted crust, because you grill a bulky roll, there's no saying it doesn't just turn hard and brown.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there, and it dries it out. It dries out the fresh roll.
You can microwave it. It doesn't even have to be hot.
No, microwave.
You can't microwave
you
anything.
You call yourself a sandwich connoisseur, and you use the word microwave? What's up with you?
No. I would not microwave. I would toast it. I'm saying if you want the maintain the squishiness, I agree. I would never microwave bread.
No, you can't microwave almost anything. There's nothing you should microwave unless you have to.
That's right.
A microwave is an emergency situation because if you microwave anything, it just turns into hard crap. Something goes wrong with it. Microwaves screw with food on a molecular level.
Look,
it ruins it.
You guys come to my house. I cook you a Dan Pashman patented grilled egg and cheese sandwich, and you will see the light.
I'm sure
I promise
it would be good.
That.
I'm sure it would be good, Dan Pashman. But what I'm saying to you is you started this argument with this like blanket statement that you cannot have hot stuff on a cold bread, and you've made a concession.
The yes. only concession I'll give you is corned beef, and that's because there's so much corned beef and so little bread that it will warm the bread while keeping it fresh, but that won't happen in most sandwich ratios.
What's changed, Dan?
Not much. I will say that both you and I talk slower now.
Yeah, well, that was morning, and I was on 900 cups of coffee and a handful of M&Ms and complete mania. And that other voice you heard was Mark Reilly, who was my co-host for a couple of years on the morning show. That's Mark Maron morning show energy.
That's right.
I wasn't going to give you an inch, though.
No, and you didn't. But, you know, the funny thing about listening to that is, like, when I first set out to do the Sporkful, I was like, this seems like a fun idea. I think it's a different way to talk about food. It actually wasn't until after I started doing it that I was like, this is the role I was born to play, you know, like, and then I started thinking back to the segments we did together, and I was like, it was right in front of me all along. You
right.
know?
Well, I think that being passionate about something and being excited about something and having opinions about food, I mean, there's very few arguments you're going to have about food in the world that you're running in where you're going to end a friendship or you're not going to talk to somebody for years.
I was interested to see, I was reading up on some interviews with you, Mark, mm-hmm. talking about different food issues, that you said you like melon balls.
Yeah, I love them.
That's your ideal shape?
I don't know. You know, I know this is sort of your wheelhouse. It is a very practical way to eat melon.
How so?
Well, because they're just little balls that fit in one mouthful per ball. And my grandmother, grew up with it. My grandmother used to make melon balls. I don't know if it's specifically a Jewish thing, but I actually have her old melon baller. And like during the summer, it's a very quick way to eat melon.
So
like
you pop it in your mouth straight from the melon baller?
I can, but I usually make a bunch of melon balls and I'll put them in the fridge. Like I'll do a whole melon and I'll put them in a container and I'll have them and I can just pop them in my mouth.
With your hands?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes I put it in with other stuff, throw some blueberries in. I just like the shape of the melon ball and I like the experience of it. It might be something from my childhood, but also like when you're using a spoon or you're cutting the rinds so you can eat them with your hand like that. I mean, that's all well and good, but melon balls, it just seems like, you know, you can not do more with them, but they're nice in a fruit salad.
But
you're talking like you have some other way that you think is better, Dan.
Well, I mean, my concern with melon balls is that you put them on a plate and they roll around. They're hard to fork. They're hard to stab once you put them on a plate. If you're gonna grab them out of the fridge with your hand, okay, fine.
Hey, I got something for you.
What?
A bowl. Put them in a bowl, you dummy. What do you mean? Put melon balls on a plate? Yeah. Well, yeah, they're going to roll around.
But often melon balls are served like with dessert at a picnic, let's say.
Uh-huh.
And so there's also...
They don't have the little paper bowls?
Well, but there's also cake. There's also other things.
Why would you put them on the same plate as cake anyways? That's a fault of the host. I think your argument is silly. Melon ball is a good way to eat melon. If you're at a picnic and you have slices of watermelon, eat the slice of watermelon. But like, let's say you have a fruit salad.
But see, I like something about the way that a square or a rectangle of fruit sort of fits into your molars better and you can really sink your teeth into
I think this is a stretch. I think that, like, you know, if you how could you not like a melon ball?
I think that you have been swayed by the fact that they are aesthetically pleasing.
They feel good to go in your mouth.
What, do you chew them with your molars?
I chew them with my teeth. I'm not specific about that. I don't put a melon ball in my mouth. I'm like, I don't know if this is really working out with my teeth. I got my teeth. I only have a couple. My teeth are screwed up. They only meet in a couple places. It's like, you know, I'm going to get through it. But I like the portion control of a melon ball.
Oh, it comes full circle.
Mm-hmm. What?
Portion control.
Yeah.
But like, you feel like
I'll eat 20 of them. I don't care. But I like that they're just like their own little things. You know, and also like if you're cutting up melon into I don't know. It's like melon balls are fun to make because you ball the melon and then there's all the melon that you couldn't get. And then you just scoop that out with a spoon and eat it right there. Like, you know, after you do, you scoop out all the melon balls you can, there's still a lot of melon in there, and then you just eat that.
And then do you hold the rind like a bowl and tilt it back and drink the juice that's sitting inside it?
Yeah, if it's in there. I mean, it's sort of hard with watermelons, and you look kind of crazy.
Has that stopped you, Mark?
Nope.
What's something you've been cooking a lot of lately?
You know, I've been roasting that kombucha squash.
Okay.
K-A-B-O-C-H-A. It's like fall. I just roast it. I'll cut it up, carve it out, and you roast it for like 40 minutes with some. I've been using coconut oil.
Oh, interesting.
It's really good. So I've been doing that, doing the kale. I do like andouille sausages, the chicken sausages. I don't make them, but I eat them. I roast chickens a lot. I roasted a chicken the other day so I can eat it for the week. But I just, my rosemary bush died, so I don't have the fresh rosemary anymore. But I find just putting salt and pepper in the cavity and just roasting it up. But it's hard to beat rotisserie with my oven. But I like to roast chickens.
Let's talk a bit about kale.
Yeah.
Kale now is such, all the rage. And it's funny because it's like,
I don't know when that happened. It's like become a necessity.
Well, it's funny because I will forever associate you with kale. Mm. Like when we were working together 10 years ago, I feel like you were always talking about kale.
Yeah.
Like you were way ahead.
And now, like, I do a joke about, not knowing when that happened. I think I started eating kale. Like, I do a joke about, like, when did the cultural conversation about kale start? And it's like, I don't love it, but I'm used to it. And I've always thought, like, I do. It's weird. I feel like I'm doing something good.
Right. Like you're giving to charity.
Like I'm doing something virtuous. I really invest like an unreasonable amount of belief in the idea that kale or that type of greens is necessary.
Right.
And I do now, too. And I kind of think it is.
What's your relationship with kale these days?
Well, I just bought a bunch. Like I put it in Vitamix.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like I usually try to get.
Like what's your go-to kale smoothie in that thing?
I usually put an orange, a lemon, a big chunk of ginger, and then I'll stuff it like as much kale in there as I can. And then I'll get that, I'll liquefy that, and then I throw in some berries and a frozen banana and ice. That's it.
What do you call it?
I call it, we got to do this. This is going to change everything.
All right. Well, Mark Maron, the podcast is WTF.
Do we have closure on this stuff?
Yeah. I mean, look, have we come to an agreement on this debate from 10 years ago about the bread? You agree with me now that bread should be warm, right? If you have a hot sandwich?
No. I mean, you can grill the bread a little bit, but I mean, I don't like, no. I mean, you don't warm up rye bread. You don't need to warm up fresh rolls that are nice and crusty. You don't need to.
Even if the inside is hot, you're going to put that on cold bread.
No, but not room temperature. I mean, what are you going to put your bread in the refrigerator? What's your bread temperature?
But that bread is going to be, it's going to cool the inside of the food faster.
No. I don't think so.
Well.
What? We can live with this one. And you're wrong about melon and melon balls. I think we agreed on eating barbecue.
That's right. All right. Well, that's something. That's progress.
It is. It is. Good luck with everything.
All right. Thanks, buddy. All right. Mark Maron hosts the hugely popular podcast WTF. His latest book is Attempting Normal, and his TV show on IFC is Maron. And it was great to see Mark and hang out. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. One more friendly reminder, call Book Review in Huntington, New York for your personalized copy of Eat More Better, or get it wherever you like. It's available in hardcover, as an ebook for iPad and Kindle, audiobook that I read through iTunes and Audible. Every way you can get a book, you can get this book. We're actually working on getting it in pill form, which I think would be really efficient. Or actually, maybe in cheeseburger form. Wouldn't that be so awesome if, like, I could send you a cheeseburger and you could eat the cheeseburger and then in eating it, you would have read my whole book just by eating the cheeseburger? Oh, man. We got to work on that. Maybe for the sequel. Okay. Anyway, this show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani. Our web writers are Talia Ralph and Alight Trong. Special thanks to Chris Bannon. Next week on The Sporkful, I'll sit down with Cronut creator Dominique Ansel, and we'll argue about the best way to eat a croissant, or croissant. Until then, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.